Welcome back for another delicious, fresh helping of oysters, clams, and cockles. Only the freshest, right here. Wherever you're listening, Spotify, hopefully. I'm anti-Apple now, Barrett. I'm Ross Bolin here with Barrett Dudley to discuss the things that have been happening on the televisions. Did you forget to fade me out?
I did. I forgot to
was
do
I
the
being, Was I being just yelled over by the theme song that entire intro?
Yeah, and then I probably did. That was probably a slightly too quick of a fade out, but it's okay. You heard the beat ride a little bit longer. You heard it was it probably matched up really nicely when I did my little oyster slurping / Hannibal sound right along with the beat. People were like, "Oh, that was really creepy and weird."
Speaking of Hannibal, the television show Hannibal is getting more attention now that what's his name won Best Actor or whatever the movie he was in won Best Picture or Foreign Film or something. It won something.
Mads Mikkelsen?
Yeah, Mads. Did you ever watch the Hannibal show?
No, but that was a net. I remember that it was a network show.
Uh huh.
That like pushed all the boundaries of what how
networks.
Gnarly
yeah.
a network show could be, because it's pretty gory.
I mean, you could have easily believed it was on, you know, HBO or Netflix or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it was for sure. And I mean, it was, the other thing, it was really good.
Yeah, that's I remember that was like one of the best network shows of the last decade or so.
For sure, I didn't go past the second season, but mm-hmm. the first two, man, it's like. It is a very interesting and creepy look at what it might be like if a very disturbed serial killer was also a highly advanced and gifted psychiatrist. Played by, Mads.
Yeah.
Mads.
What do they got going on right now? Oh, there's a network show called Clarice. Now.
I watched that movie, though, that Mads was in.
On Another Round.
Yeah,
How was that?
I watched that shit. It was great.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
It was really good. Leo...
DiCaprio?
No chance. Don't know what he's thinking. Stupid purchase.
He bought the rights to
Another Round to remake it in America. And remember, there was some speculation around how that would even make sense, because it was such a... It's a cultural fixture, absolutely. You have to be in the place that the cultural things are cultural things to make sense.
No, it's just going to turn into... I mean, I haven't seen it, so I can't... But maybe you can help me out here. But where it's based in Iceland or Sweden or Norway, something like that?
Those, right? Yes,
so
correct.
It's very much a cultural thing there to kind of like have drinks whenever, sort of?
Well, here's the concept. These guys essentially come up with the idea that... And there's some philosopher back in the day that said the human body is running with not enough alcohol in it, that it actually is supposed to have more alcohol in it, and that if you did everything while having consumed a little alcohol, mm-hmm. that it would be easier and you'd be better at it. And these gentlemen start this test experiment, if you will, in their day-to-day lives. One of them, Mads, is a teacher. So he starts going to school drunk, basically, mm-hmm. or a little tipsy, you know, under the influence.
Slightly buzzed.
And he becomes better at his job. He's more charismatic. He's engaging with the kids more. Now, here's where this stops making sense. Where is this? Still looking it up.
Greenland,
the Netherlands, Iceland, maybe.
Is this not just directly in the plot description on
that's
Wikipedia?
Why I'm saying, there is a theory that a man is born with... The plot, it's like they're going out of their way to not tell me where I am here in the fucking description. Scandinavian graduation cap is one of the plot keywords. That's Denmark. Is it Denmark?
Is the movie even called Another Round? Did I get that right?
Okay, country. It says Denmark, Sweden, Netherlands. Language, Danish.
Language is Danish. Okay.
Okay, whatever.
It's a Danish film.
Here's the reason it doesn't make sense, because Barrett, if in America, four friends got together and went, "Hey guys, you know, this crazy thing, alcohol, like maybe if we drank it, we'd have more fun." Our fucking entire culture is built around this concept. Everyone here is an alcoholic. This doesn't make sense in an American film. It wouldn't even translate just conceptually. You're like, most of our country operates this way already.
Okay.
The way we hold alcohol in America as a fixture of everyday life makes the premise of this film weird if you translate it.
Okay. But I actually would say that, and again, I have not seen the movie, so I'm speaking from the low ground here, but...
Whereas I have seen it and I'm speaking from the high ground.
From the high ground, sure. But one of the things that we always talk about in America, like as with regards to alcohol, is a lot of the
poison.
We regard it as the, as it's very similar to the difference between sex here and in Europe.
Sure.
Like, it's very much like it is not nearly as salacious of a thing over there.
Uh-huh.
Right? And like, kids are like having a glass of wine at dinner with their parents when they're 13 years old.
Culturally,
and it's very like a natural thing to like introduce this piece of life as a normal thing, not this like
dangerous, crazy
thing that you like.
Stay away.
Right, exactly.
So then all of us are like, well, I'm going to do as much of that as possible.
Yeah, so it's like our relationship to it is almost, is like, is
theirs is healthy.
Theirs is
ours
healthy.
Is very
ours
healthy.
Ours is not nearly as healthy. It's we're way more, like, I'm not saying people don't get fucked up there and go out to bars and pubs and
well,
stuff.
Well, and they got their own problems, let's just say. In America, our versions of these ones are different.
But I just feel like their relationship to both sex and alcohol is, like, far healthier and far... Everybody understands that it's like that, like in moderation, it's very much a normal thing. We scandalize it here. We glamorize it. We sexualize it. It's both, like you just said, it's dangerous and it's bad, but it's sexy
so dramatic.
And it makes social life tick here and like right all those things. So it's just, I hear what you're saying though. This is not it. This movie very much depends on the culture that it's based in.
Yeah.
And therefore,
well, but
how's
is
it going to really translate? It's not really going to translate. I'm picturing
general
like a
argument,
bunch of
that one that you just laid out.
Yeah.
Was what people were concerned about. Then I watched it, and what I'm saying is, this is why, and it's because alcohol in American culture is held in a different place where, I think you could still pull it off, I guess, if you had the right characters, but you would have to do more build up, is what I'm saying. This film just jumps right into it.
Okay.
And you're like, okay. And it's not really weird, but if you were watching it and expecting that it was like Chicago or something, you'd be like, wait, what the fuck's wrong with these guys?
Yeah, it just feels like it would turn into, I mean, and maybe the, another round is like this too, but I just feel like it would turn into like a drinking buddies movie. Like a bunch of bros getting hammered with each other. Like a beer fest, basically.
But we have that, right? Over and over and over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah. I don't know.
And like The Simpsons exists, which covered everything in this movie. Great film. Don't understand how the American adaptation is going to work.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with today's
show. I also, you know what else, just to pick a nit here, I kind of want to believe that Leo is like a respectful film guy. And it's really annoying how we do this as Americans.
I hate this.
They make a great film internationally, and instead of just like enjoying the international film, we're like, oh, well, we gotta redo it for American audiences.
Hollywood version.
Yeah. Why don't we just appreciate another round and put another round in theaters and like pump that movie up instead
of like,
I think
it must have hit
you know what I mean?
It must have been one of those things where he watched it and was like drunk and this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. And he's like, I have to fucking
buy
this.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean? Yeah. Something like that. Anyway, today's show, the main focus, everybody's here. They're probably excited. Oh, we're going to talk about Dave season two. Handmaid's Tale finale only. Handmaid's Tale finale only. If you're here for anything else, get out. I'm kidding, but we are going to talk about the Handmaid's Tale finale first. I want to hear about
you
it.
You want to hear about it.
I'm dead serious.
Okay, spoiler alert. If you have not seen the finale of A Handmaid's Tale.
What season are we on?
This is season four.
Four.
Please exit now.
Get out. And for those of you who didn't know, if you want some background, I watched season one. I watched season two. I pulled the ejector switch because
halfway through season three.
Couldn't take it anymore. Halfway through season three. Let's say halfway, but really it wasn't.
Okay.
Two episodes, something like that. Barrett has been, I think you exited for a little and then you went back though?
I did. I exited about two-thirds of the way through season three.
Yeah, you lasted a little longer than me.
I lasted a little longer than you. This was back when there was still, you know, when we were all still like traveling and doing fun things like that.
Before Pandy.
More regularly.
Pre-Pandy, as you put it.
And I went on a business trip or something, and the lady of the house finished it all because
she continued.
I was basically like, I'm out. I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah, it's one of those things. You know, when you watch a show with a partner and you despise it, and in and out week after week, you're like, this might be my last week. I don't know how much longer I can take this shit. It's awful. And they're really enjoying it. Like eventually, if you go out of town on a business trip, they're finishing that hoe without you.
Right. Right. So season four rolled around. She was really excited about it. There's obviously a more of a dearth of new television right now. And so you know, I just used it as leverage to trade it for some other things. TV show, definitely not anything else.
This is how you know you're an adult. When you're doing the negotiating within your relationship on TV shows to make sure that you both get what you need, then you've accomplished relationship. Today's episode of OCC is brought to you by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? All of us butt up against different challenges in our lives. Therapy can help, and that's where BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with a licensed professional therapist today. I've been in therapy for many years now. A lot of people think, you know, it's like self-help or a crisis line. No, this is professional counseling done securely, and in the case of BetterHelp, online. Online only. You don't have to go to an office. You don't have to see a doctor in person. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. They've got a broad range of expertise available, which may not be available locally in many areas. So if you're in your town or your city or wherever doesn't have the therapy or the counseling that you need, BetterHelp can be there for you. This service is available for clients worldwide. You log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor whenever you need to. You'll get a timely and thoughtful response. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions with your therapist, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room ever again. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches so they can make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available as well. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Get in there. Get yourself some help. Get yourself some therapy. Talk it out. Visit BetterHelp.com/dragon. That's BetterHelp.com/dragon. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. I've done it. Barrett's done it. In fact, so many people have done it and have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. That's BetterHelp.com/dragon. BetterHelp.com/dragon. 2020 screwed us all up, and we need BetterHelp.com/dragon today.
So, I've watched all of season four now, week to week. We stayed on top of it, and
it was something. So remember,
it was something. Yeah,
I caught a random one. Remember?
Yeah, right.
I caught the one where
Handmaid's Tale get got by the train. Right,
the train wipes out like literally everyone that's not June or the one-eyed girl.
Yeah.
In a split second after a 30-minute chase scene.
Yeah.
But it was like, it was chaos. Like, it was powerful chaos. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, this is why I like this show.
Right.
And I had missed probably 14 episodes.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like I missed anything at that point. So I'm really curious. I haven't seen anything since, and I'm really curious to know how the season rounded out. And yeah. Is Handmaid's Tale back?
So I will say, for its credit, to its credit, that this season of The Handmaid's Tale did do some things that I really liked, and in the second half, when June is out of Gilead and in Canada and dealing, you know, with being back in the same house as Luke, her husband,
it was so dramatic,
and dealing with group therapy sessions with other handmaids and Martha's and everybody that this group that had made it out, like all that was definitely good and more interesting and the type of stuff that I wanted, because of what was one of the biggest things that was bothering me about this show is how like seasons two and three basically ended in the exact same way. They literally they were the same season almost, where June just kept getting like, she's going to make it out. And then
she doesn't
make it out. She can't leave. And like there's.
It was frustrating.
It was very, very frustrating. And the show seemed to be spinning its wheels on purpose. You know what I mean?
Like
did not want to move forward. It felt very much like we got
to
milk this for seven seasons because this is our best show.
Well, they just didn't have the idea yet.
So we can't move the plot forward. So I was happy to get somewhere else, somewhere new with this season. One of the things that I was kind of just casually chatting with Laura about through this season, I was like, for such a dark, dark, you know, show, it doesn't like to kill characters that aren't peripheral. It's never really given us a big major death.
What's the name of the two assholes who are in Canada now? They were Nazis. They were June's holders for the first two seasons or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Commander
family.
Waterford.
Waterford family.
And
the Waterfords.
And Serena Joy Waterford.
Yeah, Serena and the douchebag mister still being alive is all the proof in the pudding that you need that this show has been very hesitant to kill off major players.
Yes. So, at the end of this season, we do finally get a very, very big, big death.
Is it Aunt Lydia?
It is not.
Because she survives like six other near-death experiences on the road to the end of season four.
The finale actually leaves a lot. There's some Aunt Lydia and One Eye, Janine, stuff going on back in Gilead. Janine does get sucked back into Gilead. She does not continue on with June. They do rope her back in. Frustratingly, yes.
What is wrong with this writer?
They do not go back to that piece of the plot in the finale. I was actually a little bit surprised. That's clearly going to be a season five generator.
Aunt Lydia is still alive.
Aunt Lydia is still alive.
We're on season five.
She's dealing with Janine, and there is some thought that Aunt Lydia may be about to turn a corner and go against Gilead. We're not sure. There's some thought that that's potentially what's happening.
I'm becoming angry again.
But in this finale, what we do get is a big death. We get the death of Commander Waterford.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Finally. Okay. But he was like pretty much worthless at this point, right?
Well, just to lay it out for you.
Hit me.
Just to lay it out for you.
Hit me, Daddy.
Do you know Serena Joy is pregnant?
Yes.
She's gotten pregnant with Commander Waterford's baby. They have, you know, it's a miracle, it's a blessing.
And then June goes in there and she tells her to her face.
Outside of Gilead, yeah, you saw the screaming, like,
and that was
the most intense thing you've ever seen.
It made me ask myself, is The Handmaid's Tale back? Because that episode I watched where she goes in and confronts Serena was like the moment that I had waited the first three seasons for and never got.
Right, yeah.
And it was so tight. So continue. She was pregnant.
So Commander Waterford makes the decision to basically go state's witness and turn on Gilead and go full informant. He's going to lay out everything in exchange for his and Serena Joy's freedom.
Ah.
They will not be prosecuted. They will not be charged as war criminals. They will go free, essentially.
So none of the rape or the murder or the kidnapping imprisonment.
He's going to spill all the beans on all of Gilead's infrastructure and power hierarchy.
Help them take it down.
And everything, which is
huge.
A huge deal. And probably true to life. Huge. If this were, they would absolutely cut this guy this deal for all the information that he has.
Yes, and Barrett, you have to imagine that when this plays out, Gilead falling in season 14 or 15, I'm just kidding.
This obviously enrages Jin.
Because she is now watching the man and woman that ruined her life get let off the leash and even maybe in the future be written into the history books as heroes.
Potentially, yeah. And they already have like a little following that's building in Gilead of people that are like pumping them up.
Yes!
I mean, in Canada, yeah.
Fuck this show, dude!
So
yes, those are the kind of things that made me hate it.
So, we got that going. June back channels. Pulls off some deals with Commander Lawrence.
That guy's still over there?
Back in Gilead.
He's still getting it?
And we don't really know what he's doing.
Eric from Billy Madison is still over there. He's pregnant too, by the way.
Doing stuff.
He's going to be a soccer player.
She pulls off a deal, basically, that Canada can't turn down, where they're going to basically make a prisoner exchange for like 25 freedom fighters in Gilead, Marthas and other handmaids and whoever else, in exchange for Commander Waterford instead. So they flip the script and they do this prisoner exchange, and then she uses that connection with Lawrence and Nick, who's the head of the eyes now.
Nick's worked his way up to head
all the way head of the eyes. Yeah,
this whole Gilead organization is ass.
They prison him all up. They cuff him. They bring him to like the no man's land border, where June and all of the group therapy people are waiting in the woods.
Do they stone him?
To chase him down and beat him to death.
Oh, they beat him to death.
Yeah. I mean, they go nuts. They go nuts on him.
So this is one of those things where it's like, it's the human question of, like, they go nuts on him, right? And it's like, is that
justice?
Stooping to the what the animalistic, like chasing somebody into the woods and beating them to death with your bare hands.
Yep.
Like you have removed your own humanity now.
Yeah.
Is that a just response to somebody who has tried to remove your humanity to give them what they want?
Yeah. And that's exactly the question the show is asking at this point because we watch, you kind of saw the beginning of it when June
Very
screams
so.
At Serena.
Yes.
And the next several episodes are essentially her.
That journey.
Really, really not avoiding that rage, but channeling it even further.
So exploring
and like,
the anger and the rage.
And exploring that anger and that rage and convincing others that it's that you shouldn't move on, that you should allow that anger and that rage to flow through you.
Oh, that sounds very much like the dark side of the Force.
And so it's kind of like, you know, at the end of this season, June has become an anti-hero, essentially.
She's not,
you are wondering, like,
is June bad?
Is June bad now, essentially? Has she gone full dark side to pay, you know, to get justice, to pay these people back?
And more, I guess, it's the blurred line between justice and revenge sometimes, right?
Right.
Where to get revenge, you have to go dark sometimes.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, and that's the scary thing. And it's the thing that even in watching the few episodes I got to watch this past couple years,
yeah,
you kind of picked up on with June. It was like, she's so broken at this point that there will need to be some fixing, or she has a lot of bad potential too.
Yes.
Because, I mean, look, she's an incredibly strong woman who has been poisoned by years of abuse, rape, and mental torture.
Yes.
So the prayer is that she can recover from that, not sink into it, right? And so, like, as you put that, that's an interesting storyline to
me. Yeah, yeah.
Getting rid of Waterford. Wait, so to clarify here, though, Waterford made a deal that he was going to give them all this information. Did he get to give them all the information before they had him whacked?
He started giving them information, yes.
Oh, that's good. At least we got some. Yeah. So it's not, you know, June didn't, like, ruin the whole possibility of...
No.
So it's not that June ruined the chance to take down all of Gilead by giving up Waterford.
Yeah, not quite.
That would feel really
they were obviously
stupid.
Still in the process of getting all the pieces of information out of him.
So it still feels like Cary Matheson.
But he definitely had started talking. They knew some stuff for sure.
But are they angry that June just?
No. The main guy over in Canada.
Yeah,
who I'm talking about.
I kind of thought June and him might have a thing there for a minute. I was
the person who he might have, who he carries a torch for, is Serena.
Oh,
because they kind of built this simmering relationship over the course of season three as he tried to talk her out into leaving Gilead and fleeing the kingdom.
I know they like that actress. I get it. They cannot make her a good person, dude.
No, they're not. They're definitely not. At the this season explored very much her finding power again that she hadn't had since pre-Gilead.
Okay.
And really just, she's truly like the master manipulator. Like,
she's a really fucked up sociopath.
Yeah. She's perennially this, like, going to be in this gray but mostly dark area where she is able to show some type of humanity and compassion every once in a while, but it's always for her own gain.
It feels like she tricks you into thinking she's redeemable,
yes,
just so she can fuck you in another way.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's not going away, and is only actually getting even more powerful and more severe now that she has a child that she is invested in.
Yeah.
I thought this season was definitely a swing back up. There are pieces of the show that I simply, like, can't get over that will always rub me the wrong way. And I think the biggest one is that because it spun its wheels for so long, I've seen the emotional beats of the characters over and over and over and over again. So every time we come back to June doing her version of the Cary Matheson face.
It's like June rage face, kind
of? The June rage face, the simmering, like, kind of chin starting to shake, like, eyes starting to tear.
Less humorous than Carrie's, though, be real. It's less humorous.
Far less humorous.
Okay, good.
But every time she does that,
you
and every time they
so
use it.
So many times now.
I'm like, it's kind of like an eye roll.
Yeah.
And at the same time, they burrow in and they drill down so much onto these interpersonal relationships and spend zero time talking, like, building out the world, really?
Like, what is happening in the fucking world?
Yeah.
No other countries are invested in trying to stop what is, like, clearly a very toxic situation in the States?
This draw out of the character plot lines would have made so much more sense if you were intersplicing more of the geopolitics and the, like, what is actually, what is the status of the United States actually, and what is their relationship to Gilead, and what is Canada doing? Is, like, what does the war actually look like? How is it being fought?
Yes,
who's fighting
fill
it?
Fill us in a little.
What is Europe's part of, like, you, I just want.
How do we not have those pieces four seasons in?
They tease it every once in a while. They give you, like, a little drop, but it's, I want more of that.
Here's the
so
feeling
that
I get.
So that I understand, like, that's context for the way that these people feel.
But this is the feeling I get with these writers for The Handmaid's Tale. Season one was so good and, like, dark and different and creative, and it spun off of these books, right?
Yeah.
This is a book
centered. It was a book, yeah.
One book,
yeah. There's a second one, but it's a different, it's something else.
Okay, so everything since then has been trying to kind of figure out the bearings beyond the book and do the whole Game of Thrones dance that we've all seen be a problem for people before. But the thing with this show, and that the feeling I always got, was that they had really good places to take us. It's that they were scared to do it too soon.
Yeah.
And they wanted to be able to draw it out as long as they could. But they were really, really bad at hiding those potential places early on, so that it always felt like, wait a minute, why aren't we going there?
Yeah.
Why aren't we doing this stuff? You guys laid out this amazing board. Now you're going to make me fucking wait. And then by the time season three was halfway through, I was like, you know what? Fuck you guys. I'm out. And it sounds like that's sort of the position they're in again, where it's like, they know that they could open this up, but it's almost too late. It might be too weird now, and maybe they need to save that for a rainy day when the show's ratings tank again because they fuck up for two straight seasons.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I don't know, man. It's such a weird one. This show is so weird.
At the very least, they did clear a piece off the board now, and it is going to be different. Like, I think we've essentially sealed it up that June is not going back to Gilead, and Commander Waterford will not restore his power over her again. So at least that option is no longer there.
Right.
And we are dealing, like they have moved some of these character pieces forward. Her relationship with Luke has essentially crumbled at this point, and he sees her. She comes back all bloody after the murder and is holding the baby and is basically like, just give me 5 minutes. I know I have to go. Like, I know I have to leave, essentially.
Like, I'm not going to work here anymore. I'm too fucked up to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the house living with you and this baby, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm a murdering psycho.
Yeah.
Damn, that's intense, dude.
But and her relationship with Nick, still very much intense and there. They have like a big makeout right before she makes Commander Waterford run and then kills him.
She asks for the chase.
Yeah,
like, had the opportunity to just off this dude and was like,
she wants the woods because that's how she got caught. Right. And so she wants to put that fear in him. And so she holds up a whistle and a gun and he says, I know you're not going to shoot me. And she goes, okay. And she takes the whistle and she blows the whistle. And then all the other girls come out of the woods. And she says, yeah, run. And then they chase him down.
Dude, I'm going to have to go watch this.
So, yeah, it's got it. Once again, it.
But the build was too slow and they fucked me. And that's the point.
It sets itself up for at least another good thing they did this season, which was probably due to the COVID protocol and the fact that this was a bitch to shoot. This was only 10 episodes. These seasons do not need to be 13 episodes.
Thank you.
10 episodes is the number.
Okay. So your answer is maybe tis The Handmaid's Tale back.
My answer is maybe, yes.
That this season was a big upswing, but that, frankly, there was a lot of trust lost in seasons 2 and 3.
That is correct.
And they need to regain some of that some more before we can sit here and say, everybody needs to go watch The Handmaid's Tale, because certainly some stumbles along the way.
And a little bit like you alluded to, I just know that this show is never going to be exactly what I want.
Right.
Right.
Like, we've talked about why, too,
That's why I can say that, like, I don't think I'll ever just say, yes, this show is certified capital B back.
Yes.
Because it's always going to have some pieces of in it that I just flat out disagree with the way the writers are handling it.
Yeah. I'm with you. That's how I feel too.
But does it have more interesting places to go? Can it continue? Can it carry on for another interesting season or two? Certainly. You know, I wish they would give us a little bit more of what is actually happening in the world, because that's interesting, man.
And for me, it feels too late for that, but we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So,
another big television talking point this week is the debut of Dave season two.
Yeah.
You and I spent a lot of time talking about season one, how much we enjoyed it, how it was one of the few things pre-Bo Burnham era that ever felt like it was literally made for me or made for us or made for, like, it was so just up our alley, dude. As guys who love hip-hop and have listened to rap music since we were...
Well, in between Pete Davidson and all his various projects, King of Staten Island and anything else, and then the Bo Burnham and then the Dave, it's just, it's a big moment for white guys with mental health struggles.
We're doing great, and we're really killing it, yeah. So, Dave season one created a situation where, like, I think it was unexpected. Nobody thought season one of Dave would be as good as it was. We all knew Lil Dicky as a parody rapper, basically. Nobody thought he was going to come out and make one of the hottest comedies and smartest comedies of 2020 or whatever 2019, I guess. And he did. And then season two was highly anticipated as a result. It was a lot of fanfare last week when it was coming. I saw a couple few commercials during the NBA playoffs and shit. Like, and then it came out and I haven't heard shit. And I think I know why. And let me say up front, I haven't gotten to watch any of it yet.
Okay.
But you told me that episode one was incredibly dark.
Yeah.
In our text group, we were talking about it. And I think you said episode two wasn't much better when it came to darkness.
It is not.
And there are only two episodes out.
Yeah.
Therefore, and look, we saw in season one where this show was kind of willing to go in terms of getting a little heavier. Like, we had the silliest fucking shit in the world, man. Guys on milking tables.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had some of the darker moments I've seen ever in a comedy television show ever.
Yeah, the what happened in season one and the difference, one of the differences so far, is that season one started with the troubles and the struggles being pretty solvable, funny, kind of light, right? You know, Dave was trying to get in the studio with YG, right? Like, he...
Silly ass shit.
Silly
shit.
Wants
to be a rapper.
And then there was that point halfway through the season, I want to say it was episode five, where it really kind of took a turn and added some heavy elements and
Gata.
And some layered stuff here. The Gata episode, started diving into more of Dave's own struggles.
His psyche.
Then we had the relationship stuff with he and Allie, and that was super interesting and kind of heavy. But it...
His relationship with race, it delved into, like,
right, yeah,
how as a white guy in a black culture...
But the base and the foundation that it set was pretty light, very funny, and kind of what we might have expected from Dave, from Lil Dicky.
Right.
That obviously... This season doesn't just pick up where they left off, because it ends on kind of a high note where he's sitting there with Charlamagne Tha God... He drops a big flow. It's good. It's hot. Bangs.
He is making it in the moment that the season ends. Right?
Yes. And this jumps forward to, you know, Lil Dicky now signed with a label and trying to make a record, and it's straight up dark. Like, he is struggling more than ever. He is dealing with like. He's got bacne going on, which is like absolutely torturing him and his confidence and his psyche. He can't write anything. He has no songs for this album. He's off in Korea trying to shoot a K-pop video, which he royally fucks up. And
there
are many things going on here. I have not seen the movie Uncut Gems, but I heard a lot about it. And I got the sense that episode one was a take on Uncut Gems. I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Was it just incredibly stressful and high-paced?
The entire time.
Yeah,
yes.
That's pretty accurate.
There are very little breaks for levity, and a lot of it is like high-intensity stress, and then there are moments where it's just like six people screaming at each other, and it's...
not enjoyable.
There are not that many laughs. And then episode two... comes back to L.A., his boy Els, played by Taco, is back.
Love
and
that
is
guy.
Like fully L.A.'d now. He's fully Hollywooded up.
Okay.
He's hanging out with Kuz and Zach Bia at a party that he throws, and Lil Dicky can't get a word in, and it's super awkward, and he's stressing about maybe seeing Allie at this party. It's just, it's dark.
Kind of not what you expected.
It's not what I expected. There are obviously moments where you laugh, but it's, I think FX, this is definitely, FX likes to let their auteurs and their creators just do what they want to do.
Right.
You know, we know that from the shows that are on, whether it's Atlanta or Always Sunny in Philadelphia or whatever else.
They will get weird, for sure.
So two things come to mind. I definitely think Dave is watching a lot of Atlanta and wants this show to be
in that vein, right?
In that vein. And I also think that it has to be one of the points of these first two episodes that they are making you incredibly uncomfortable, because that's what they are.
Yeah.
And we got moments of that in season one.
Oh, for sure.
Like the milking table episode
and him talking about his cock
and the rubber doll and him to all the dick talk is like, it's very uncomfortable.
Oh, for sure.
But it's really lifted up by a lot of hilarious moments through the first two episodes, man. You kind of hate him. And so
I
think there
was an element to that in the first season, too, though.
He's still so charming.
Well, you want to kick his ass sometimes.
Yes.
But you're also like, he's just trying to figure it out. Right? So I think that's how I feel about me most of the time, like about myself going through life. It's like, that's what's so good about this dude, is he does a really good job of being, like he is very famous and successful and rich now. Okay, and he does a really good job of showing you, like, look, this hasn't been fun for me. A lot of this has been an ass kicking. A lot of it has been complicated. There's a lot of really funny stuff, but there's also a really lot of hurtful, painful, dark moments involved in this process of trying to make it as a creator and a rapper and in a world that you don't understand and that doesn't understand you.
I mean, that's a big question for me after these first two episodes, is just how much of Dave is, like, I want a percentage. What is, you know, how much is him writing for the show and for this character versus how much is actually, like, how kind of, you know, messed up he either is or was or somewhere in between? Because there are more sex toys. There are more sex toys that that are causing problems for Dave.
I mean, look, that shit doesn't come from nowhere.
Right.
I'm just saying, like, there is nothing written by anybody that's not inspired by something.
Sure.
That doesn't mean, though, that Dave is like some sex freak that has serious issues with sex.
Well, he's also smoking way too much weed in these first two episodes, and it's causing like tics. It's causing tics and little like things that he does.
That's not good.
Yeah,
that's not what you want at all.
And I'm super interested to hear your take on these first two episodes.
Let me tell you my story, though.
They are straight up like borderline not unenjoyable.
Okay, yeah. So. And this is interesting news to me, because you told me it was dark, but like, come on, you know, I like dark shit. And my darkness meter is probably a little less sensitive than most. So I got excited to go watch it last night.
Yeah.
And I turn it on. I got Hulu going. First of all, it takes me 20 minutes to get Hulu to work properly. It keeps telling me I've got the wrong type of HDMI cord.
Oh, that's not good.
When I press play. And only on the first episode of Little Dicky Season 2. Anything else I can play, Barrett. Really convenient, right? So I'm clicking that over and over for 20 minutes. I'm a little high in bed. I'm getting frustrated. I'm tired. You know, I just wanted to watch the first fucking episode of this show before I go to sleep. Finally, 20 minutes of battle, I get it to play. So I watch with subtitles, right? Because, you know, I like art. And the subtitles come up. They start talking. I can tell. It's Lil Dicky, it's Dave, and his boy with the red hair that's like his manager, and one other guy, and they're going up to a stage. He's going to go perform at a big concert, and he's really nervous, and the screen's black, right? And I'm like, oh, they're doing that cool thing where like the screen's black until a certain point in the conversation, then I'll be able to see. And Barrett, no, there's something fucking wrong with my Hulu. And it's not everybody's Hulu. It's just my Hulu.
Have you...
I restarted it. I logged out. I logged back in. I did everything. I spent most of last night trying to get to watch episode one of Dave season two. So I have heard the first couple minutes.
Okay.
But until I either get another Apple TV, figure out what's wrong with my Hulu account, or throw myself through the window, that's the only update I have. I am looking forward to it. I'm not shocked to hear from you and our other friend in the group text that was kind of like, yeah, it was pretty fucked up. Really hoping it becomes funny and fun again. I'm not that shocked because... we're going to get a lot of this. I think last year fucked a lot of people up.
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys are going to be putting out shit that's reflective of that.
That's actually an interesting piece of it. It's as these shows come back, One of the big questions for each and every one of them is, do they tackle the pandemic at all? Do they include the pandemic?
Will they be impacted by it?
In their storytelling, right? Do they kind of keep up with their real world? Or as everybody that's watching Loki will know, do they create a variant path, an alternate reality that goes in a different direction? Do they split the timeline essentially?
I keep seeing more and more about how good Loki is. So it's killing me, man.
Dave does the split. They go alternate reality. There is no pandemic. It's all.
Thank you, God.
Yeah.
We don't need many people to do the other one because,
from what I've heard,
it's too hard.
Succession is also just acting like it wasn't fair.
Thank you, God.
And yeah, I think that's. I'm a fan of that. I think what will be interesting is as the long tail of the pandemic kind of like
recoils
through society.
Sure.
That takes probably another year or two,
something
I would
like
say,
that. Before it's like really not talked about that much.
So that's the weird part is like as things are just slightly different over the next 2 years instead of just a 180 from what we
will that like, stuff get incorporated?
Yeah, does that stuff get incorporated a little bit more?
But I think so.
But if you avoided it to begin with, then you can't really like retcon it in. So
I think it depends what happens long term.
Yeah.
How extreme are some of the changes? And I think we're starting to see
but that's kind of the gamble, right?
Yes.
If you ignore it all together and then things never really like go all the way back.
Or COVID-21 hits.
Or there's COVID or there's then it's like, well, shit, what do we do? Now do we just play in this truly an alternate reality where this didn't happen?
Because the other option, do we try to write
some of it in?
The other option is to address a world where nothing fun was allowed to happen.
Yeah.
And you can't do it successfully in story. Like, yes, there will be stories that come out that are just about the pandemic and focused in the pandemic and set in the pandemic. But if you're dealing with a bigger story that has nothing to do with like the health and safety of humans on a daily basis, dude, nobody wants to hear your pandemic take.
Right.
Nobody cares what you thought about masks or the vaccine. Ignore it. Pretend it never happened and continue to entertain us with your silliness and your fun.
Yeah.
We don't need that shit. We lived it. It's too soon, Barrett. Too fucking soon. If 20 years from now you want to make a movie that includes this shit, fine. But right now I have zero interest.
Yeah.
Zero in seeing these stories that are fictional be infected by my reality, which sucks cock.
Yeah.
And that's all I have to say about that. Looking forward to diving into Dave. Was there anything else? Loki one day. Dude, I'm about to say screw it. I've watched enough Marvel to know, look, this isn't the most intricate, complicated fucking storytelling in the world. I have a gist for what happened. I'm about to go do the Wikipedia route because I can't take it anymore. Loki looks like very interesting and like I'd be excited and love it.
I
don't know what to do.
All of these shows, all these Disney Plus shows, they are aided by the context of having seen the movies.
I know.
But they don't require it.
It's not make or break.
You're right. Like I have not seen that first Avengers movie in, I don't know, 8 years or something like that.
I'll watch it pretty
recently. You know what I mean?
For the first time.
It's I've seen obviously Endgame and Infinity War more recently, and I caught up on a bunch of them. But Loki right now is an interesting show because the concept is cool and because the chemistry between Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson is pretty electric. Like
Owen Wilson, man, who saw that shit coming?
Again, you know, could it take the show from a B+ or an A- to an A+ with all of the knowledge and all the context? Yeah, maybe, but it's not like the difference between I don't understand this show, it's bad, and oh wow, this show is amazing.
And I want to be clear to Marvel people. I respect you. Good for you. You've seen all 40 movies. That's great. Look, if this was a 2-3 movie project, I would give you the doing proper of watching them before going to the television shows and getting to enjoy the recent stuff. And I think if you listen to this podcast, you know I don't like doing shit like this. But I don't have 30 hours, Barrett. I want to watch the new stuff now. I'm sick of watching these old-ass movies with shit that I already knew happened because I've seen the damn memes.
Yeah.
Or stuff that's been, like, basically now I'm hitting a point where I'm watching movies build to stuff that I already knew. And I'm like, okay, what the fuck?
You should probably just watch Infinity War and Endgame. Move forward, yeah.
I know all the other shit for the most part, and frankly, while enjoyable, I feel like I'm missing out on the current
Yeah, the biggest problem
masterpiece.
Is that, the biggest problem is that that most of the movies that you haven't seen, and especially the ones that you like got stuck at, aren't very good. Yeah. Or they're okay. They're watchable, yeah, right? But they're not.
They're tight, but they're not world breakers. Like, yeah.
Two Thor movies aren't great. Iron Man 3 is like okay. You know,
who do they fight in the third one?
Avengers 1 is like it's all right. Avengers 2, Ultron is like pretty good, but you know
they kind of snowball though. That's
they
the problem.
They do.
It's almost like you know what? I bet I can find it on YouTube. I bet there's a YouTube that includes like the 30 minutes from the first 20 movies you need.
Probably yes.
And then I'll only get those moments, and then I can just be like, okay.
There's definitely. I had a big gap between watching Infinity War and Endgame, and I found something that like recapped Endgame or Infinity War in 10 minutes, basically on YouTube.
I think that's the route that I'm going to end up going.
But
I had to guess.
But if you can't get that Hulu to work, then just fire up Disney Plus and watch Infinity War and Endgame.
Will do. Barrett and I will be back on Thursday, as we always are, with another episode of The Sopranos. We're on season 3. We're having a lot of fun. If you've never watched The Sopranos before, or if you want to do a rewatch with us, our Patreon podcast on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles drops every Thursday ad-free and is friendly to both first-timers and rewatchers. The Sopranos, HBO's classic crime drama, one of the greatest television shows ever made. Recently had Steve Sciarrapa, who plays Bobby Boccalieri, as our guest. That's available only on Patreon. I promise you, it's only $5 a month minimum pledge to join and support OCC. These weekly episodes that come out to y'all right now are really brought to you by the people who are on Patreon and supporting the show. That is our main source of revenue. That's the way I'm able to pay Barrett, pay me, and make Boland Media happy. So if you want to support us, if you like what we do here on this podcast week in, week out, and you want to watch The Sopranos with us, or even if you don't, but really, I'd appreciate it if you did, make more sense for you. Get on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles today. Join Barrett and I, one episode per week, week by week. We're only on season 3. You could get caught up super fast. You don't need to be like on time and on pace with us if you didn't want to be. You could just jump in now. And if you've already seen the show, start in season 3 with us. It's a blast. We're enjoying it. We're loving it. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. That was the McDonald's commercial.
Have it your way. Have it your way.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of which, support our new sponsor, BetterHelp. Get in there, use the URL, use the code, do your thing, help yourself. Barrett and I'll be back.
People helping people.
People helping people. Holy shirts and pants. Until our next helping. A fucking ZD. Salud!